All right, so there we go. Welcome to yet another awesome evening where we can spend time for the next hour with Kingdom Legislation with myself, Dwayne van Rensburg, and none other than my co-pilot and my colleague for the past few years, Reverend Paul Coupe. But before we get there, a big, big shout out to all of our listeners and our loyal followers the past few years, especially those of you that tune in every last Monday of the month to join us. So we want to give you an invitation. If you've got anything that you want to share with us or perhaps want to ask us, please do so. Send me a mail. Very simple, dwayne@radiopulpit.co.za or just sport@radiopulpit.co.za. We are here this evening and we are ready to serve you, myself and this beautiful lady on the other side. Maybe let's just start off by greeting Rev. Good evening. How are you?
Hey, good evening, Dwayne, and good evening to all our listeners out there. Thank you for joining us. And yeah, we've got a lot to talk about today, Dwayne. I must admit, I'm a little bit disturbed in the spirit. And I'm hoping that this conversation will be a wake-up call, really, to Christians, because the way things are going, they're very concerning for me. And we're going to talk today. I want us to focus about the aspect of freedom of religion. So I'm going to start about talking about what it is. What is the principle called freedom of religion? What is it all about? Why is it in the Constitution? And why is it so important to us? And as Christians, how do we begin to take advantage of that provision in the Constitution, which is there to protect our right of belief? Because I don't think we've done that successfully, Dwayne. I think we've been very sleepy Christians. As you know, this program is intended to educate us, is intended to mobilize and lobby Christians to understand their rights and to stand up for those rights. And as God has actually called us to be the salt and to be the light, which means we don't just sit down and take any piece of legislation and, you know, just play dead. We don't roll over and play dead. We need to be very aware of what's going on. We need to perform our ecclesiastical responsibility, which we have mentioned time and time again, that as the ecclesia, and when you know, interrogate the origin of that Greek word, which Jesus was talking about in Matthew 16, 18, I will build my church, the ecclesia, that it has a governmental and legislative aspect to it. So when he's talking about I will build my church, he's talking about building a group and a generation of believers who understand their rights, who know their mandate, who function as salt, who function as light, who have a governmental aspect and a legislative aspect, but they're fully involved in the laws, the policies, the government of the day. So today I want to talk about religious freedom. And first of all, let me just say, and I want to leave us, Dwayne, with a challenge. My prayer is that everybody who's listening to this will really go back, have a moment of introspection, ask yourself, really, do I know what freedom of religion is? Have I been actually enjoying freedom of religion? As a South African, This right is espoused under the Constitution. Am I enjoying my right to freedom of religion? So let's first of all just have a high-level discussion on it. What is freedom of religion? Well, freedom of religion is contained in most constitutions. So as you know, the Constitution is the highest law, really, the most supreme law of any nation. It's the law that contains all your freedoms, not only your freedoms, but also your responsibilities as a citizen. And so every other law, whether it's law dealing with marriage, whether it's law dealing with property, whether it's law, you know, dealing with the Health Act, whatever law it is, it takes its strength from the Constitution. It cannot be unconstitutional. Any law that is in violation or not in alignment with the Constitution must be amended to align with the Constitution. The Constitution is the overarching piece of legislation. So whatever is in the Constitution, then we need to take very seriously. And freedom of religion, you'll find that provision in, I think, pretty much all the constitutions around the world. What does freedom of religion do? Well, it upholds the right and the value of human dignity. And again, human dignity, the issue of human dignity, most democracies will say that human dignity forms a cornerstone, a foundation of our democracy. So in essence, you can't talk about a democracy without talking about human dignity. Human dignity is a central and foundational aspect of democracy. And freedom of religion is closely connected to the aspect of human dignity. Now, in our constitution in South Africa, section 15 is the one that deals with the issue of freedom of religion. And section 15 reads as follows. It says, everyone has the right to freedom of conscience, religion, thought, belief, and opinion. So let me read that again. Everyone has the right to what? To freedom of conscience, religion, thought, belief, and opinion. So that every person in South Africa, you have a right to freedom of religion. What does that mean in simple practical terms? It means you have a right to practice your religion, or if you choose to, not to practice a religion at all, because it's not just framed within the context of religion. It says even your thoughts, your belief and opinion, you have a right to express that as well. So now we need to look at some of the issues, because I'm very, very concerned that this right of freedom of religion, my own belief is some of the court decisions and some of the legislation that's being passed and some of the policies that are being adhered to are not actually supporting Christians' right. We have an enshrined, entrenched right to practice our religion. And the way things are going, guys, it doesn't appear to me that Christians are afforded that opportunity. I think other faiths are being afforded that opportunity. And I believe that Christians are being targeted. Their capacity to practice their religion is being limited. They're being targeted. The CRL has not brought any other faith under investigation or under scrutiny except the Christian faith. Why is that? Is the Christian faith that has been targeted? Is the Christian faith that's being investigated? Is the Christian faith that's being called to answer? And I'm not saying that pastors should be allowed to operate in any illegal way, but I'm saying, why is it that the CRL is focusing only on the Christian faith and not interrogating, investigating any other faith? The CRL, for instance, one of the questions I asked them was to say, when I wrote an open letter to the CRL, I said, CRL, you're not only supposed to be looking at faiths, you're supposed to be looking at cultural practices. And one of the things I asked the CRL is, why aren't you investigating the deaths? So many young boys are going up under certain cultural practices. They are dying because they are undergoing certain cultural practices which are not sanitary, which are not pro-health. And many young boys under initiation processes are dying. That should be under the CRL investigation. Are they investigating it? No. They're only focusing their investigations on certain churches. So it's a concern to me. So religious freedom, it guarantees and gives everyone the right to practice their religion. Or like I said, if you choose not to practice your religion. Now, the question I want us to ask ourselves squarely, as a nation that have said that we are predominantly Christians, have we been afforded that right to practice our faith and to practice our religion? Now, the next thing I want to do, Dwayne, in having this conversation is I also, I think I'm going to introduce for us a Freedom of Religion South Africa at a later stage. But let me cite a few examples as to why I'm saying we're not getting the fair deal. We're not getting the fair end of this stick. So let's look at a few cases here. Number one, I don't know if you remember the issue of spanking of children, Dwayne. There was an issue. And right now, as we know, it's illegal for any parent to spank their children. For me, that is a freedom of religion issue. Why? Because our faith guarantees us. It talks about discipline, you know, and it gives us that freedom to discipline our children, not to abuse our children, not to oppress our children. And as I always say to people, I don't know about you, Dwayne, but I was spanked as a child. And you are looking at somebody who's not abused. I'm an only child. I was loved very much by my children. I mean, by my parents. Very much loved. I'm not abused. In fact, spanking, which was always administered on me in love and for correction, not abusively, spanking literally saved my life. Mm. I have a testimony to that because I know at a time when I was a teenager, I was hanging around with wrong people, wrong crowd, and my father spanked me, and that spanking brought sense into me like a prodigal child. I came back, and I got to tell you, Dwayne, some of the people, wrong crowd I was hanging with, when I look at how many are alive today, Dwayne, most of the people, the crowd I hung around with, they're not alive today. So meaning that spanking literally saved my life. So spanking of children now is illegal. That means as a Christian faith, we cannot exercise the guidelines and directives that are given to us in the Bible, which says that when necessary, you know, spank a child, take the rod. Discipline a child. Use it as part of the corrective disciplinary measures. The Bible tells us those whom God loves, he rebukes. And that is one of the ways. But like I said, nobody is encouraging abuse or anything of that. So that's one case whereby now it's been outlawed. It's not allowed. Second case. We saw another scenario where our faith again was minimized and not taken cognizance of. The issue of vaccines. The issue of vaccines, Dwayne, you'll remember that. Whereby we had there were legal issues around it. Medical doctors were supposed to inform us, you know, in terms of law, you are supposed to inform somebody medically what is contained in whatever they're administering on you. That was overridden. There's international law and constitutional support for that international law to say that you cannot administer any medical intervention on me unless you tell me what's inside. And doctors could not tell us what was inside the COVID vaccine. So they were injecting us against our permission. We didn't grant permission and without proper due consultation. And also against our faith. There were some faith elements that we raised. And that's why I said to some people, go to the CRL because they must address these issues of faith. Issues around Christian schools operating. Why is it only Christian schools? Dwayne, and I'm sure you can say much more on this. The attempt to shut down Christian schools. The attempt to limit the manner in which Christian schools can operate. You can't use this name. You can't do A, B, C, D. There are German schools out there. There are schools that do things that relate to their faith. Mm. They're not being interrogated. Mm. They're not being shut down. Why is it only Christian schools that are being targeted to say, you're not allowed to use this name. You're not allowed to enforce this. Why? So you can see it even within the education policies that are being thrown out there. And I don't know, maybe you might even have more to say about it, Dwayne, because you operate a Christian school. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's so much to say. And if we open up this can of worms now, we're gonna need multiple sessions for this, but I can testify to this. And because we are a Christian radio station, I can say this. and I will be outspoken about this, but whenever I see schools operating within the sphere of Christianity, I see order, I see respect, I see discipline. Recently, we attended a school, and I'm not going to mention the school's name, but no religion may be spoken. There's a smoking corner for kids. If your parents give consent, you can smoke. I was looking for the deputy principal to report one of these leaders, and I looked for the deputy principal, and they sent me to the smoking corner. And this deputy principal was in the smoking corner with two of his leaders having a smoke. Now, if you look at how those leaders were dressed, no order rules with hair, long hair, earrings, no cell phone policy. It was total chaos and disorder. And that's the part that I'm in conflict in my mind, because have a look at the results of our Christian institutions compared to these other institutions. We reign superior compared to all of them. Why want to shut us down? Anyway, sorry. Different topic, different day. Sorry, Rev.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I just thought, because I know you run a Christian school, I know that, you had a lot to say on it. So I just thought, you know, to allow you to interject on that. So all these things that are going on. Now, Dwayne, I want to at this point bring in Freedom of Religion South Africa. And there are a couple of things I want to say about this. And then there's a recent case I want to talk about. And this is really what prompted this conversation today on freedom of religion, because I want to send out the message to Christians that until and unless we contend for our faith and we stand up for our faith, we are going into a big, big hamors. It is not going to be nice for us. And I want to say some things around Freedom of Religion South Africa. I have the privilege of sitting on the board of this organization. 4SA is the acronym they use. It stands for Freedom of Religion South Africa. And I want to say, and I want to launch an appeal out there to the public. Please familiarize yourself with 4SA. Please familiarize yourself with the work that they've been doing. I've been privileged to have been an activist in this area for about 20 years. And so when 4SA started about 10 years ago, we have been working very closely on some of the same initiatives. And like I said, now I have the privilege of sitting on their board with other Christian leaders. So 4SA essentially was started in 2014, just to give you a little bit of a history and a background. And the reason how they started, Dwayne, was in 2014, because there was a church, an evangelical church in Cape Town in 2014, which was targeted specifically by an atheist couple. And they were reported by this atheist couple to the SAHRC. The SAHRC is the South African Human Rights Commission. And the reason they were reported was because of the church's teaching on biblical and parental discipline, which we just talked about now, that the Bible gives us license to correct our children and to discipline them in a godly manner and in love and rebuke our children. So this atheist couple now reported the church on this basis. And that's how 4SA actually started, really to stand on behalf of this church in terms of becoming a legal advocacy organization that could now protect and promote the church's constitutionally entrenched right, as I've said to you, is in Section 15, protect the church's right to freedom of religion in South Africa. So that's really the background to how 4SA started. And as I've said, this right gives every person, every organization, of whatever faith, the right to believe in what they choose to believe, and also the right to freely share and live out their beliefs. So it's very important that we remember this. So 4SA has been in existence now for about 10 years. And some of the causes or cases that they've been involved in, we've discussed them here, Dwayne, on this. You know, the hate speech bill we did, the Pepuda bill, we were doing all of that, you know, encouraging people to make submissions in line and in partnership with Freedom of Religion 4SA. You know, the hate speech bill, which wanted to send pastors to prison, because essentially one of the things it was going to do was to say that if you preached about sin And there's certain categories of sin that the Bible talks about in the Bible. But according to the hate speech legislation that had been drafted, it was going to send certain pastors who preached provisions from the Bible, they were going to go to prison for quite a long time, you know, more than 7 years even. And 4SA, you know, along with 4SA, we educated the public, and 4SA worked very hard also to bring in a component of religious exemption to a certain degree. So in other words, for instance, if you are preaching and it's not about trying to show hatred towards anybody, but it's within the context of expressing your faith, then there's some element of religious exemption for that. And 4SA worked very hard in that. Other cases that 4SA have been involved in terms of trying to protect our religious freedom. So another case was the aspect of religious marriage officers. So you'll remember that the Marriage Act was being changed and drafted. And in as part of that Marriage Act, marriage officers, many of whom are Christians and pastors, were going to be forced to solemnize marriages that go against their religious convictions and beliefs. Because we know that the Marriage Act now includes aspects of same-sex and multiple marriage and all of those things, polygamy, all of those things, which are all against our Christian faith. So 4SA also intervened on that issue, representing the church also on an issue of religious freedom. Another very big case that 4SA was involved in also had to do with the issue of an LGBT same-sex couple that wanted to marry at a particular venue. And that venue was owned by Christians, and they declined on the basis, again, of their religious convictions. So 4SA was heavily involved in that case as well. So I'm just trying to give you a little summary of all the cases that 4SA have been involved in. And I do also want to say, 4SA does not have formal sponsorship or a formal way of you know, the volunteers, the people who are there. Good friend of mine, Michael Swain, who is the leader of the organization, and he has about two or three staff. It's a very small office. You would think that it was a huge office because of the amount of work that they do. It's a very small office. And I want to launch this appeal. I myself, I'm a volunteer. Everything I do, Dwayne, almost everything. I don't get a salary. So nobody should think that I'm trying to get money for this cause. Even though I sit on the board of 4SA, I get zero money. So this appeal that I'm making out is not because I'm being paid a board salary. I get zero money. So I want to make that clear from the beginning. But the 4SA staff are full-time staff. They have expenses, they have, you know, offices to run and pay for, you know, all the office expenditures, transportation, they have to fly, they have to go to court, all of that. So I do want to encourage the public to really support them in any way, support them in prayer, support them with kind words, go to their website. If you can also support them financially, I would encourage you to do so. Their website is www.4sa, that's one word, 4SA, F-O-R-S-A, .org.za. So it's www.4sa.org.za. And the reason why I'm encouraging anybody to partner with 4SA is that I am very vocal, I mobilize, etc. But at the end of the day, guys, I'm not the one who's going to be going to court. I mobilize the public, I do petitions, I educate, I sensitize. 4SA has a team of lawyers that we rely on to go to court. When we have to go to court, there's a team of lawyers, because I just don't do that anymore. My court-going days, it takes a lot of time. And like I said, because I'm a volunteer, I'm not getting any funding, so I can't spend all my days being wrapped up in legal issues. But we do have a team of lawyers, and all of that requires funding. So I do want to encourage the public out there, please go. There's a button for donations. The intercessors out there, support them, because they're doing a great work in terms of defending our religious freedom. And Now, Duane, I wanted, for the last 20 minutes or so, I wanted to focus on a particular case and raise this up. And I want us at the end to have a conversation to say, South Africa, do we see where we're going? We need to contend for the faith. Now, the most recent case that was brought to my attention, which now made me want to talk about this case and discuss this case, is a case that, and I'm going to leave it anonymous. I'm not going to talk about at this stage, because we've reported the business in question, and it's being considered now. We've reported the matter to the CRL, and I'm not going to talk about the people involved until the CRL has adequately dealt with the issue. If they don't deal with it in terms of, you know, the way we would like it to be dealt with, we will have to take the matter up to the Constitutional Court. But Duane, I'm very concerned. Recently, one of the people that I mentor, actually called me. And this is somebody who has a business. And the business is a meat kind of, they provide meat. And the business, this company or this chain of stores had invited people, business people in South Africa to tender, to approach them to see if they would qualify to provide and supply, be a supplier to this business, this chain of businesses. And this particular business is a Christian business owner. In terms of every other criteria that was detailed, in terms of practical logistics, in terms of everything that was needed, they qualified. Now, the problem came when the business asked them, do you have a halal certificate? Are you halal certified? And the Christian business owner responded to say, no, they are not halal business certified. And as a result of not being halal business certified, the company then said to them, please ensure that you're halal business certified, because it is non-negotiable. We will not be able to sign you on and to allow you to tender for this unless you are halal business certified. And the Christian business owner replied to say, in terms of my belief, it's not something, it's also non-negotiable on my side, because my beliefs do not allow me to go that way in terms of halal certification. And of course, they were then disqualified and told they could not tender for the business. Now, we have to interrogate this in terms of Section 15. Section 15, can we honestly and truly say that to disqualify a Christian business owner because of their particular religious beliefs, to now, adhere to another faith, to another faith's belief at 3%. Now in South Africa, the aspect around halal and living out halal life and eating halal certified foods applies to a 3% minority. The question that we need to consider now is, can an overwhelmingly Christian majority population, and remember I'm talking statistics because I'm not talking about democracy, and democracy talks about numbers. We have to look at the aspect of majority. We have to look at the aspect of discrimination. Is it fair to discriminate against a Christian business that is exercising the principles of their faith and to disqualify them on the basis of their religious beliefs? Is that fair? All the Christian business owners, therefore, in South Africa have been disqualified for a particular religious belief and faith of theirs. Is that fair? So we have to look at that, because it's setting a wrong precedent. It is setting a completely wrong precedent. And as South Africans, we understand the principle of discrimination. Apartheid was based on discrimination. And South African citizens, freedom fighters, struggle heroes, fought long and hard to ensure that discrimination did not take place. So we have to look at this very discriminatory practice that has now completely discriminated against more than 80% of a population to say, because of your Christian values, because of your Christian faith, because of your Christian belief, you are not allowed to tender for this business. We have to interrogate that. It has to be interrogated. So, Dwayne, I wanted to just mention this, and I also wanted to say, sound out a call to Christian business people, entrepreneurs, to say that we cannot allow this to be set as a precedent. As a nation that is trying to encourage entrepreneurship, in a nation that has 40% unemployment, in a nation that is trying to encourage Black business owners to say, get into the field of entrepreneurship, this is a Black African couple that took the initiative to start a factory. And now we're telling them, because of your religious convictions, you are disqualified. We have to really interrogate this as believers, as South Africans who have fought hard and people who have died to uphold a principle of non-discrimination. Is it fair to be discriminated against in this fashion, in this manner, when Section 15 actually protects one's right to believe according to the way they want to believe? So that essentially is what I wanted to talk about, Dwayne, and I wanted to issue a call and a challenge out to believers. I'm going to be writing about this in my regular articles, in my column in Joy Magazine. I'm going to be writing about it. I'm going to be talking about it, and we're going to be pursuing it as just in the interest of justice, in the interest of fairness, and in the interest of non-discrimination. If it means going all the way to the Constitutional Court, we're definitely going to be pursuing it. But I want to sound a call out there to Christians to say this is completely unfair. And if you allow it, that means as Christian business owners, you will not be able to exercise your freedom of religion. You will be, in essence, excluded from all entrepreneurial businesses, entrepreneurial ventures, until and unless you are halal certified. You cannot successfully participate in certain economic ventures because of your faith and because of the way you believe. So as Christians, we have to really challenge this. We have to challenge this, and we have to stand up for our rights and stand up for our Section 15 constitutional right, which allows us also to practice our religion and our beliefs, and which should not be dictated to by a 3% minority in a nation. So yeah, so that's my story for today, Dwayne.
Well, Rev, let me just quickly fill in on something. As I'm sitting here, and you've said this earlier in the program, the two of us have been going at this for a couple of years now. I still remain shell-shocked at the statistics that you mentioned, and the fact that we are an 80% plus so-called Christian country. I'm shell-shocked at the fact that we have the numbers, yet when it comes to legislation and when it comes to all of these, bad things, why does the minority, how did they get it right to push all of these things? I don't understand why we could just collectively stand up against the minority. For me, I am shocked at that. Rev, we've been going at this. I mean, we had this one session, myself and you, trying to inform people about the Bella Bill. And they've opened this up for public comments and for public discussions and all of these things. Yet, still a certain section of the Bella Bill was signed off by the president. Why don't we get the numbers to stop this?
Yeah, and I mean, some of the sections, 59 and another section, will be put into action in the next 3 months if you know, they were just temporarily suspended by the president. So there's two aspects to it, Duane. One is, yes, you're right. There's a non-responsiveness by the church. We're sleepy, we're complacent. And that's why my last article that I wrote for Joy Magazine was talking about contending for the faith. That as Christians, when are we going to fulfill Jude 1:20, where the Bible instructs us? It's not a recommendation. It's not a suggestion. It's saying contend for the faith. What does that mean? It means stand up for your rights. It means stand up for the faith. Don't just sleep there. You know, and at least, you know, I saw that a little bit during the Olympics when Christians were offended at the opening. We saw a few Christians stand up for that. But we need to consistently do that. We can't be, and people do this to the Christian faith because they know that we're not going to fight. They will not dare do this to other faiths, Duane, because they know that there'll be a hullabaloo. They know that there'll be protests. They know that other faiths will respond in violence, aggressively and violently. And so because they're scared of that aggression, they will not do that. But Christians, and I'm not suggesting by any means that we become violent. We must not. We must not become, you know, we must not go out there killing anybody. We must not go out there assaulting anybody. Our faith does not support that. But again, it does not mean that we become a doormat. It does not mean we become a carpet that people can just ride over our faith. We must not be silent. Mordecai told Esther, if you remain silent in a time like this, you'll be substituted. And the problem with us as a Christian faith is we remain silent. So we are not to respond violently in an aggressive manner where we kill, hurt, assault, maim anybody. But we definitely are to contend for the faith. And contending for the faith means standing up for your rights, means speaking up for the Bible and what the Bible says, means being vocal at the time you need to be vocal, means protecting the biblical principles. All of that is contending for the faith. God did not say it's going to be a walk in the park. It's not going to be a walk in the park. So I want to really extend an invitation and a call. You know, our national anthem talks about that, sounds a call to come together. Yeah. So I want to, in the context of our national anthem, I want to extend that invitation. Sounds a call to come together, believers, and to protect your right to religious freedom. That's what I want to do, because the noose is getting tighter and tighter. First of all, you can't spank your children. You have very little rights over your children. The government now can teach your children immoral principles concerning sex, engagement in sex, comprehensive sexuality education. You have little rights in terms of what to teach your children. The Children's Act allows children to engage in sex from the age of 12, to have abortions. That is taking away parental rights. All sorts of things going on that are taking away parental rights in terms of how we can educate our children, in terms of our own Christian convictions and beliefs. All of that is being taken away. And now at the economic gate, within the business perspective, now even our rights to get involved in the nation's economy is being taken away. It's been taken away. You can't even tender for a business, a contract, unless you have adhered to another belief, another religious belief, which is only practiced by 3% of this population. So the noose, like I said, is getting tighter and tighter. It was around our children. It was around educational policies. Now it's going into the economic policies, that soon you as Christians will be completely shut out of the economic engagement. Because now for you to qualify and to engage and participate in the economy of a nation, you must have aligned with principles that are foreign to our own Christian faith. So if you don't wake up, Christians, if you don't wake up and protest and make your voice heard, that's where it's going. That's where it's going. Soon the economy is going to be within the hands of a very small percentage, a minority. Only those who are halal certified will be able to actually engage in the economic participation in South Africa. So we need to speak up. And like I said, please support Freedom of Religion South Africa. It's very important. Yeah.
Right,
so that's my story.
But what is our
today?
What is our call to action specifically now for the church, for the listeners right now? Shouldn't we at some stage start some form of a movement, well, which you guys have already in place, just mobilizing the church so that we can get more numbers? Yeah. I think you guys are involved with something like that.
Yeah, well, the call to action, like I said, first of all, get educated.
Yep.
Understand your rights. That's call to action number one. Call to action number two, I want people out there to know that so that you know, let's have a conversation around this and let's not back off this discussion. Call to action number three, we are awaiting the decision of the CRL. After the CRL, we are going to take a decision as to how do we take this forward. If the CRL does not address the matter the way we feel must be addressed, then we're taking it to the Constitutional Court. And that will be call to action number four. Support us. Support whatever it needs. Like I said, going to the Constitutional Court will require lawyers. So financially, etc. We are not doing this. This is not my company that I'm protecting. We're not getting any benefit out of this. We're trying to defend your right to engage economically. This is the rights of all Christians. So if there's a need to support the case financially to go to court, that will be call to action number four. Call to action number five, like I say, support Freedom of Religion South Africa, because if they close down, then you and I are going to be in a little bit of a, gemors dirmegar situation, because they are helping us go to court. Like I said, I help at a certain level, but I'm not the one who's going to be going to court. I can advise those going to court. I function as a consultant, but I myself no longer go to court. So yeah, support 4SA, Freedom of Religion, South Africa. That's the call to action. And call to action, speak out. And let's call out any companies that do that. Name and shame them. Name and shame them. Don't be, be vocal about it. Be vocal about it. That's the only way we're going to be able to push back unfair, discriminatory practices.
Right, so Rev, you haven't been at home for a while now. You've been traveling like always. What's on the calendar of Reverend Paul Kupay for the next few weeks? Where can we see you in action again?
Well, on the calendar this weekend, I will be, and I've got a spiritual son of mine who's come from up above in West Africa. He's got a conference which focuses on worship. So this weekend, we're going to be there. Starting from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, teaching on worship. It's called the Feast of Incense, Feast of Incense Conference. We're going to be there. It's going to be amazing. So please check my Facebook wall for all the information out there. They're going to be teachings on really what worship is. And I encourage everybody to come. So it's going to be Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday, the whole day. They're going to be teachings on all of that, and a time of worship. Many people know the song, Kadosh, Kadosh, you reign, you ancient Zion's king, Kadosh, Kadosh. It's a song that was actually written by Daps, Apostle Daps Guam, who is the visionary behind this conference. So that's what we're going to be doing this weekend. And we're just looking forward. We've got lots of conferences. Check my Facebook page because there's so many meetings. Last month we had 14 conferences. This month I think we have 8. So there are a lot of meetings that are coming up. We look forward to seeing you and to meeting you. There'll be a prophetic conference, I know, as well, with Reverend Mark Uren, where we're going to be having an apostolic and prophetic conference also in the third week of October. So lots of good stuff coming up.
But Rev, then of course, we know you write for the Joy magazine. When are you traveling abroad again? Because I know you travel a lot.
Well, my next travel, I won't say it's abroad, it's just next door, is I'll be going to Botswana, and that's the weekend of the 11th to the 13th of October. So I don't know if, I don't think this program goes beyond South Africa, does it?
No, it does. It does.
Oh, it does. Okay. So to the peeps, our peeps in Botswana, Gaborone, I'll be coming to you. And our theme, I'll be going to speak at Apostle Olivier Kizika's conference. It's called The Call. So it's another call to action to the church. It's called The Call. So I'll be there from the 11th to the 13th in Gaborone, Botswana. So, yeah. And of course, you do also give us this as a link and podcast. So I will share it with the people in Botswana as well via WhatsApp. So, yeah, 11th to 13th, we're going to be there in Botswana. And yes. Definitely going to be in SADC region. I'm not going to actually travel overseas until next year. I was supposed to have been in the United States last week for the prayers for election in Washington, D.C. with an international team of prayer warriors that was led by IPC International Prayer Connect by Jason Hubbard. I was supposed to have joined some of the international ministers of the gospel there that included Jason Hubbard, Dutch Sheets, and other people there. But we prayed via Zoom because I couldn't make it to the United States.
And then just lastly, in closing, for those of you that don't know, but one of the sponsors of Filling the Gap, I'm very proud of the sponsor, is TBN Africa. And TBN Africa, Lucky and his team, we love them to bits. But I also know that there's a presenter on TBN Africa who does the show called Ambassador for Change. Could you perhaps just fill us in a bit more on how's things going at TBN? Are you enjoying your time on TV?
I'm enjoying my team. I want to thank everybody out there for all the amazing feedback we've been getting around the program. We've had, I think, 6 or 7 episodes now. The theme behind the program, why it's called Ambassador of Change, is because we want to encourage the whole body of Christ to get involved. Ministry is not just for the fivefold. It's not just for apostles. It's not just for pastors. It's not just for evangelists or prophets or, you know, teachers. All of us. The call is for all of us to be salt. The call is for all of us to be light and to bring change. So we've got the most amazing people on board, Dwayne. And just before this program, we were talking about how I need to have you on board next year. We've got the most amazing people on board who are contributing to bringing change in their community. And it's not just about celebrities or famous people, you know. So it's about that person in the community. If you know anybody who's making a real change, please get on my Facebook wall and let me know about them, because we want even to see people, ordinary people who are making substantial change out there. We've had medical doctors on my program, like Dr. Vian Stander, you know, who's approaching medical wellness from a different perspective. It's not reactive medicine, it's proactive, putting us in a place of wellness. We've had legal people like my friend Yaro Vochel, who's talking about what is our role as lawyers to bring change, you know, as kingdom change agents. We've had pastors like Pastor Chris Matebula, and he talked about his testimony as a homeless person. You know, Pastor Chris, he said at the age of 15, he was homeless living in the streets of Johannesburg. He said he was eating from the dustbins, whatever he could find. Look at him now, a global speaker, international speaker. His testimony is out there and talking about, you know, how the church has a responsibility to bring change. We've had this week's session, I had Pastor John, Apostle John Raybert, you know, son of Ed Raybert, Hatfield Church. And he's talking about the pastoral forums, Love Pretoria East. We've had Bert Pretorius, my friend Bert Pretorius, who also sits with me on 4SA board. He's been on there. We've had Peter DeFinn, Acts Christian Church, talking to us about revival and how revival brings change. We've had evangelist Rale Kolela, you know, on the program. We've had Churchill, Minister Churchill, who's talking to us about worship. I mean, it's exciting. We've had Pastor Koketso Molaolu talking to us about youth. Apostle Dapps talking to us about worship. So many exciting, exciting people. I've had Jean Guthrie talking to us about beauty. And you know, what it means to be a marketplace person there. So please tune in to Ambassador of Change. It's every Sunday on TBN Africa channel 343 every Sunday at 1 o'clock. Every Sunday at 1 o'clock, tune in. And then the repeats are every Wednesday at 9:30 in the morning and 7:30 p.m. as well. You're going to love it. And share, and make sure you're tuned in. So we all know our responsibility as ambassadors of change. Kenako, it's time.
Oh, well, Rev, once again, thank you for your time. Thank you for your willingness. Thank you for always being available for the kingdom of God. I love you to bits. You know that we've been around for a couple of years now. And by the grace of God, let's continue this.
Amen.
Well,
share this. Dwayne, encourage every people to share this link as much as possible in terms of freedom of religion. I'm telling you, if we don't stand up, we're going to be held accountable. We're going to be held to responsibility by God because we failed on our mandate. But worse, we're going to find ourselves in prison, whereby as Christians, we cannot practice our faith. And we're going to be very miserable. So let's not allow that to happen. Please, please, people, share this as much as possible. There are over 60 million people in South Africa, almost 65 million. Let's make sure that it goes viral.
All right, so there you have it. That is the end of our program this evening. And I think I can say on behalf of myself and Reverend Paul Coupe, we love you, right? But listen up, Jesus loves you even more. You know, it's so awesome for us to be in a position where we can be hands and feet to Jesus. So Rev, once again, love you to bits. Thank you for everything you do. Blessings on all of your travels and all the events that you're busy with. And to our listeners, take this link and share it far and wide so we can impact as much as possible, people. Right, on behalf of me and Rev, I'm going to say it. Kenako. Bye-bye, everyone.
Everybody.